tall and patrician, Guy seemed fresh from the shower in his morning shave. Waiting for the judge, smiling pleasantly, was City Councilwoman Sherry Rogers. So begins one of the most remarkable pieces of journalism in Spokane history. It is entitled Judge Guy Meets Sherry Rogers, originally published in Camas Magazine on October 5th, 2001, and is republished here at Rhubarb Skies. It was written by my colleague Larry Shook, who is joining me to talk about it, and with us is the woman who made this story possible, former Spokane Councilwoman Sherry Rogers. Thank you both for being here. Sherry, I wanted to start with you and have you set the scene about how you and Judge Guy, the former Chief Justice of the Washington Supreme Court, came together that day, 13 years ago.
Well, the city had decided under new leadership of Mayor John Powers they did not want to go to trial. So John Powers, the mayor, wanted to do a mediation. So he hired Judge Guy to be the mediator.
And we should explain, this was in the River Park Square
River
litigation.
River Park Square litigation. And he wanted each of the council members to meet with the judge in private. No media, no press, no public. And I just said, I'm not going to do that. And so he wanted everyone to be part of the solution. And it would look bad, in his opinion, if we all didn't meet with Judge Guy. And so I said I would, but only in a public setting. So that was the background of how I came to meet with him publicly. None of my other council members would do that.
And your purpose?
Because I thought it should be out in the open. I wanted accountability, and the public's money was at risk, and I thought the public had a right to know all the facts involved.
Larry, it just so happens that that day was your 55th birthday. And I gather you had to get up early because, as you report, a lot had been said by 9 o'clock in the morning in that meeting. So anyway, how did this get on your radar, and how did you decide that you wanted to be there that day?
Here's how I recall the prelude to that meeting. You and I, Tim, had attended a briefing in which Mayor Powers set up this mediation attempt with Judge Guy. And Judge Guy was going to be in town from Monday through Thursday. And he was getting on an airplane Friday to go back home to Hawaii, where he had retired. And so, and you and I were sitting there, and you'll recall, we got kicked out of that meeting. Eventually, they went confidential about it, and we got kicked out. But before we got kicked out, Mayor Power said, okay, so everybody get your calendars out, and let's see when we can meet with Judge Guy. And Sherry said, I can't do that. I could meet with you Friday morning. That's how I recall it. And my little wheels are turning, thinking, wow, that's not the window of,
that's not the
cone of silence. And so that night, I called Sherry and I said, now, this meeting that you're having with Judge Guy, that's going to be in public session? And she said, yes. And I said, is that why you did that? She said, yes. And I thought, I mean, Sherry had shared with me that as a little girl, she played no looky, no peeky poker with her sister Chuck with matchsticks. And I just thought, oh man, Judge Guy, Mayor Powers, you're lucky you weren't gambling the ranch here. Because Sherry would own it at this point. That's how I found myself there.
And Sherry, part of the backdrop of this is that, of course, as you noted, there was a lot of pressure on the council, not just to meet with Judge Guy, but
yes,
the bigger picture was to get this settled in mediation to preclude discovery. And of course, your purpose was,
I wanted discovery.
You wanted discovery.
I wanted the city to go to trial, and I wanted all the facts to come out. And then if it was possible to reach a deal, possibly, but I didn't want the city to pay any more than their fair share of the blame, because I knew the city was partially responsible. But the way I saw the city's case going, they wanted the city to do everything, buy out the bondholders, pay everybody off, and the city would sit back with their fingers crossed, hoping that everybody else would just be so terrified they would come to the table and chip in a bunch of money. But I didn't think that was going to happen.
But there was a fundamental difference going on here, the way we saw it, and Larry reported it so brilliantly, which is that the people driving the deal thought the healing for Spokane would start with a deal, not disclosure.
Exactly.
You had a different point of view.
That's right. I wanted disclosure, and then,
well, you said this was a cancer. That's what,
yes. Oh, yes. I looked at it just like when my husband had cancer. And I saw a lot of cynicism in Spokane from people. everywhere I'd go, people would ask me about River Park Square. How much is that going to cost? What are all the facts? What are the figures in there? But they wouldn't do it publicly, especially a lot of the business people. I called them the Republican Republicans of downtown because they had had this happen to them before. And here's one of the wealthiest families getting a HUD loan that, in my opinion, was always for low-income people to build the Nordstrom store. So I just wanted all the facts to come out because when I got into office, I saw there were two sets of books. One that was private, confidential, and the other that they whitewashed to give to the public.
And so what you brought to that meeting with Judge Guy was,
that's right,
was resolve. And Larry, you're watching this. I mean, it's fascinating to read this story. I mean, I compared it to one of John McPhee's famous stories on the tennis match between Arthur Ashe and Clark Gravener. And it's almost exhausting reading the story, the back and forth. It is this tug of war. And then deep in the store and in the meeting comes this remarkable moment. I envision it as Judge Guy letting go of the rope. And he says to Sherry, finally, "This is my hometown. I'm not going to live here. I've always considered this a company town, like a coal mining town." And it's just remarkable to me, given the energy that he had expended resisting Jerry's pleas for a disclosure, that he would let alone say this, but to say it with the reporter present. What was your reaction to it? I mean, and what were you? You must have been surprised that here you were in the room as a journalist, and he would say something like that.
You know, I've always loved my work. I love reporting. I love, you know, telling true stories about people's lives. But that was probably the most schizophrenic moment I've ever had as a reporter, because on the surface, I was just doing my job. But underneath, I was saying, thank you, God, thank you, God, thank you, God. I'm glad I didn't say it out loud. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. And I don't take shorthand. I only take longhand notes. And I was in excruciating pain from writer's cramp. And I would periodically put my hand under the table and, you know, beat it on my thigh as discreetly as I could so I could keep writing. And when he said that, I just thought, oh, well, I'm not going to start a religion here, but I know there's a God.
But you had also talked in the story about the things that you're consciously doing to make yourself as invisible as possible. I mean, you wanted him to forget that you were in the room.
You know, I was that the lovely thing about that reporting experience is that I was sitting in the room with two really wonderful people. Sherry Rogers is just the greatest joy of a source I ever had to report on, because she's brilliant, she's fearless, and she's kind. There's not a mean bone in her body, and that's what disarmed Judge Guy. Mm-hmm. Judge Guy, I think I experienced him as a genuinely nice person, a kind person. But he and Sherry just came from two different worlds. I mean, Judge Guy came, you know, from a world of entitlement and, you know, where the rules are for his class, basically his caste. And Sherry came from a world where the rules are supposed to be for everybody, but they're not, and it's really unfair. But what was so different about Sherry is that she didn't have an axe to grind. I mean, she was, I don't want to speak for you, Sherry. Sherry had a purpose, but she's not angry. She's not vindictive. And I think that's what ultimately wore Judge Guy down. And I think when he said that to her, you know, it's a company town, I'm not going to live here, he was saying, man, I'm really glad I'm going to get on an airplane and fly to Hawaii, where I'm going to live out my retirement and not be here in my hometown.
Sherry, it's been nearly 9 years now.
Yes.
And you served about that amount of time on the Spokane
right.
City Council. And the thing of it is, when I look at it, is that that period just almost coincides to the day, to the reach of the unraveling of the River Park Square scandal, the River Park Square fraud. Did Spokane learn enough from it? And did it make us better, or did it reveal us at our worst?
Spokane didn't learn a lesson, because the same people that put together the River Park Square parking garage bond put together the arena in 1992. The same working group, many of the same people are involved. And I see that coming up in the future, of Spokane's future, because they didn't hold anybody accountable for River Park Square. They didn't go to trial and get all the facts. They didn't assign responsibility to people who, they just wanted to look at this as an investment in the community. Now let's move on, people. Never mind, the taxpayers are on the hook for millions of dollars. The parking meter money that's being used to pay off the River Park Square securities fraud, $2 million a year for 25 years, is money that funded police, fire, streets, parks, libraries. And the city council, a few years ago, enacted a motor vehicle license tax. That's $20 a car, because they needed to make up for that $2 million that was going out of the general fund because of the securities fraud. I call that a River Park Square parking tax.
So what would your take be as far as how citizens and how people who inhabit public office should have learned from that, what they should be doing, and how they should do their jobs?
They should have wanted justice to prevail and accountability and to get the truth out. There's a high level of cynicism in Spokane. I saw that when I was in office, and I've seen it in other reports. You know, look at Forbes magazine. In 2009, they called Spokane the scam capital of America, and they referred to River Park Square securities fraud. And it mentions in there that no one, because they settled the way they did, no one ever admitted guilt.
Yeah.
That's shameful to me.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, what isn't shameful is really the efforts that both of you put into this from your two different jobs as an elected representative and as a journalist. It really is a remarkable chapter in Spokane's history. It, the more I read it, the more I realize that it's a living touchstone, not just to our past, but to lessons learned if we really are going to shake off the company town that Judge Guy says he doesn't want to live in. So, thank you both.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Jim.